Hello, hello. Welcome back. It's been, you know, it's been more than a minute. It's been a couple months. Sorry about that. I know I've been anything but consistent with this podcast. I do apologize for that. I'd like to say that going forward, I will be, but to be honest, I'm not super sure about that yet. And that's sort of the theme of today's podcast. So I thought, since there's been kind of a lot of not yet going on in my heart and mind this year, that I'd just use this episode to kind of settle in and sip on a coffee. Just made myself a little protein mocha over here with some collagen and just catch up on life like you would with a friend after a few weeks or months apart. So welcome back to the show. If you're new here, my name's Becky of Better with Becky or Build with Becky, my monthly strength training program. If you want to check that out, I'll talk more about it at the end, or you can head to my website, www.betterwithbecky.com, to learn more about that. But to kind of, I guess, rewind a little, since it's been a couple months, and just kind of go back to the start and even further than that, maybe even like all the way back to like a little bit of a self-intro, a little bit of who I am and why I do what I do. So if you listen to the first episode, you know, or if you know me from life, you know that I was a teacher first for 15 years. And that during the pandemic, I decided to career change into personal training, which in a lot of ways still feels like teaching, just a different topic, something very near and dear to my heart. And to a different population. And generally, it seems like adults who want to learn to get strong are a little bit more excited about it than middle and high school students who are forced to be in a Spanish classroom. But both are great. Both had a lot of life lessons in them. I just personally, I think if there's one thing that I did for the rest of my life without pay, it would be progressive strength training. And just being a fitness enthusiast of all sorts. So kind of when it comes to why did I even become a trainer? Like, why did I career change in the first place? It was really because I had the foresight to both note that I was burning out as an educator. Being a K-12 classroom teacher, I think, is arguably one of the most challenging jobs that there is. And in the show notes, I'll post all the things that I've shared since the last episode, but one of them is a thank a teacher post. I think it was Teacher Appreciation Week. And I do a little bit of career change reflection in there, but it really did remind me to walk down memory lane and think of my friends who are still in the classroom, just how much teachers put into what they do and how it's really just never ending. And, you know, sometimes as a teacher, you hear things like, oh, but you get your summers, or oh, your day ends at 3. And just nothing could be further from the truth. I remember when I was a teacher, first of all, the school year like seems to not end until July these days. It just gets longer and longer every year. And it seems to start like the second you turn the calendar to August, or at least mentally, emotionally, August 1st hits and it's like one long Sunday night. So really you get like July, which I think if people are honest with themselves, a lot of folks, even non-teachers, are not doing their best work in July. You know, like they're taking family vacations, they're off for the 4th, there are long weekends at the lake, all the summer slowdown things, which are all great. But I think we can stop telling teachers that they have it great because they get the summer off. Because one, they get about a month off. It's the same month everybody else kind of is taking off a lot. And there's so much winding down to get there, and then so much winding up for the next school year, that I actually really struggled in July as a teacher, because I remember thinking like, oh, I need to like fit in all my doctor's appointments, all the professional development that I didn't get to during the school year. I need to like plan out next year to be even better. I somehow need to fit in like a year's worth of fitness that I didn't have time to do during the school year. I would also like to spend time with friends and family, maybe actually travel or take a vacation. And it really was super challenging to get all of that in a month. And I think it's something that people really overlook. about teachers. But anyway, all to say, why did I even career change? One, I could tell I was burning out as a teacher, and I definitely just am the kind of person that I can't phone in anything I do in life. So could be that my hint of I'm getting tired and I could foresee a future where I'd be phoning this in a bit was still a lot more than a lot of people do day in, day out. But I just wasn't going to be able to tolerate that if it continued in that way. So I was ready for something new, but I also kind of looked out over my life, and I think I was maybe 32-ish or something, 34-ish. Who knows? What is age? And I kind of remember thinking, man, you know, like the one thing that's going to get tougher and tougher over the years is maintaining my health and well-being. I see it in everybody around me. It seems like it really becomes a struggle, whether it's relationship with food or fitting in time for movement or like chronic health issues that seem to creep up on people, or even just, you know, the more aesthetic side of things of not feeling comfortable in your skin or gaining weight or whatever it might be. I remember thinking like, it would be so neat to be able to learn evidence-based, sustainable ways to take care of myself as I age and to share what I learn with others as I learn it and maybe help them along the way too. So that was really kind of like the point of career change back in 2020 when I first got my certification. And then working at my gym was like the perfect way to learn a new industry, work with a wide range of general population clients, kind of learn the ropes and be a beginner again. But then a couple years into that, why I started Build with Becky was that it was a little bit of like, okay, I have experience now, I'm ready to do this. But it was also a way to stop operating from like the requirements of my gym managers and start operating from my own values and ethics, and kind of also at the same time stop trading time for money, freeing up my day to day to enable travel and other pursuits. So a couple years into the career change, starting my own business made a lot of sense to enable all of that. And then kind of a step further, a year or so into business, why we built the Build with Becky app was to really streamline delivery of Build with Becky, the program, and to create a better workflow for me, a better user experience for customers, and to also make it kind of set up to be infinitely scalable so that theoretically I could reach more people, help more people with the same amount of work, and while continuing to have the autonomy to live my day-to-day the way that I want from anywhere in the world. So that's kind of all been like check, check, check over the last 5 years. And it's kind of amazing to look back at that journey when there were so many times along the way that I felt like, man, I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. When will I even career change, first of all? Then when will I have the energy and like time in my mind and heart to create my own way of doing this, which was Build with Becky? And then how can I automate this so that it's not so draining every 5 weeks to get this program out to people? And that was the app. And thankfully I've had support along the way. I've had, you know, a lifetime of teaching and partnership of savings so that I have that runway. I have just the unending support of a husband who also has the skill set to build me an app, which is incredible, and family and friends, and of course, friends who have, you know, taken the risk to support me and try my program and be clients. Like, I've been infinitely lucky and feel so, if I said the word blessed, I'd say blessed, but I'm not a person who uses that word that way. But anyway, it's been incredible. So then kind of now that that's squared away, you know, I've career changed, I've started the business, I've to some extent automated and streamlined the delivery of the product. What is next is kind of what I keep coming back to over and over. And that kind of dovetails with the topic today, which is kind of, you know, turning the calendar to July, I realized, oh, wow, we're 6 months down and we have 6 months to go this year. This might be the perfect opportunity to kind of pause and reflect and reset a little bit and see, you know, how's it going so far this year? And as I thought more about that, reflected more on that, I thought, well, why not just share that? It doesn't have to be like some crazy thought out thing. Of course, I want to provide value every time I release an episode, and that's maybe why I'm not as consistent as I would like to be yet. But also, I think there's value in just sharing the authentic journey as it unfolds, sometimes consistently, sometimes inconsistently, and to kind of keep you in the loop as to where my mind and heart is with everything. So when I say, like, you know, check, 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 we've career changed, we've started the business, we've got the app, and what's next? I keep kind of wondering that too. And it's interesting because thinking back on that journey so far, it turns out going way back, reflecting, this is possibly very obvious, but something I didn't realize until I was a coach, that it turns out knowing how to train yourself, like being just a fitness enthusiast, not influencer, but enthusiast, liking fitness, working out a lot, is not the same thing as knowing how to train other people. And that, again, seems so obvious, but also maybe not that obvious if you think about it. Like, how many times do you see in the gym just somebody who's kind of fit, kind of like coaching their friends or coaching another gym member? And it's informal. It's, you know, they're just kind of giving them advice or whatever. But there seems to be a built-in assumption, like, if this person is fit, they know how to work out, they must know how to tell me how to work out. And obviously, if you think a little harder about that, that is definitely not true. That's like saying, if you know how to fill in the blank, you know how to teach someone to fill in the blank. And I think that's the reason a lot of people don't become teachers, is they're very aware, oh, I know how to speak Spanish, for example, but I would have no clue how to teach someone else how to speak Spanish. Or I know how to maybe code a programming language, but wow, I hope nobody ever needs me to be their coach, or that they need to be an apprentice to me. That would be a disaster. So obviously, that's not a given. And that's why I became a coach. That's why I got my certification as a trainer, to ensure I knew how to break down concepts and scaffold and create programs that are evidence-based and actually work to get people strong. Basically, knowing how to demystify things and not just like monkey see, monkey do. If you do what I do, you'll look how I look. That's not really the way fitness works. So that was kind of lesson number one. It also turns out that once you know how to coach others, that's not the same thing as knowing how to build a business coaching others. So, you know, that's a whole journey in and of itself. You have to start with who you want to serve and what you know, and kind of create a minimal viable product and beta test it with a group of users, get feedback from them, iterate on it, and eventually launch a product. And even then, probably iterate on that and change it and improve it over time. So that's a very different skill than knowing how to train a person. That's why a lot of trainers never leave in-person training. They know how to coach, but they don't know how to build a business. And that's completely fair. Or they may know or be able to learn how to build a business, but they may not have interest in doing that. And that's totally fair. It also turns out, I'm now learning. Well, this part I've kind of learned, and then the next part I'm still learning. That having a business is not the same thing as having a sustainable, scalable business. And that's in kind of every regard. You know, there were a lot of things that were unsustainable my first year of business, from my own energy to the time and money that I had for things like videography and photos and website development and eventually app development. So it just, you know, you can have a business and be completely in the red and unsustainable from an energetic standpoint. So you have to learn to create systems and make it more sustainable and scalable. And in my case, a lot of that came from developing the BWB app, which, thank goodness for Justin, right? And it also turns out, like I said, I'm still learning this one for sure, that having a sustainable, scalable business, because I have that now, BWB is infinitely scalable. Bring on the virality. Please share and subscribe, like, and all the things. Any number of humans can join this app now because it is so well programmed and it exists out there and it's ready. But it turns out even having an infinitely sustainable, scalable business is not the same thing as knowing how to talk about that business in a way that others can hear, understand, and know how to take action around what it is you offer. So basically, marketing. I am not a marketing expert just because I have a sustainable, scalable business. And just because I have a business, like I said, going in reverse, right? Like I had to start with not just like, hey, I can train myself, friends, come along. No, I had to learn how to train people. I had to become a trainer. And then I really had to learn, man, how do you start a business? And there's a lot that goes into that. That's exhausting. And then I had to make it scalable. And now that it is scalable and sustainable, I got to learn to talk about it. And to me, that feels so like, come on, it's obvious. See, BWB, Better with Becky, come along. Let's get better and stronger physically, mentally, emotionally, all the things. It seems so obvious to me because it's my baby. So of course it seems obvious to me, but that doesn't mean it's obvious to anybody else. Even current friends or subscribers who use the product and find value in it, they may struggle to articulate what it is if I am even struggling to articulate it. So that's a whole skill set that when I'm saying like what's next and I'm not sure yet, I don't mean it in the sense of like I'm giving up on this by no means, but more so in the sense of like, oh, that's right. This is a skill too. This is something I can learn and practice and improve. And just like I encourage my clients to be a baby giraffe in the gym when a new program comes out and kind of wobble around and be uncomfortable, figure out what they prefer, progressively overload somehow in some small way week to week and improve and reflect along the way, I have to do that now when it comes to talking about what it is I do. I've done the thing. I've become a coach. I have clients. I have a great product. It's infinitely scalable. My life even is sustainable now. I can travel. I can work from anywhere in the world. I have everything I need. But I still am a baby giraffe when it comes to talking about all of it. So that's kind of what I mean by not yet at this moment. That's my edge for growth right now. And when I think about that, it's kind of intimidating because I don't fancy myself a marketing expert, nor do I know that I really want to be one. But I also know that a personal lifestyle brand like mine is kind of dependent on the person. You know, I can't really outsource that task fully, nor would I want to, because nobody else is Becky. It's Better with Becky. It's Build with Becky. And I chose that for a reason. And I want that to come through in everything that I do. So it's a task that I want to take on. It's just a task that's new for me. And being a beginner can be scary. And I just posted a couple things about that this week because I'm doing a new jump rope challenge in July. And the second post, one is just about the challenge. If you'd like to join, you can check that out. I'll link it in the show notes. But the second one is kind of like I recorded myself the first couple of times and it was really hard and I kept tripping and I kept failing. And then I found this great voiceover that was a great reminder of the quote, "You don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start if you want to be great," you know? And maybe it's like, it's a little bit hard as somebody raised the way I was raised to even admit that I want to be great, that I want to grow, that I want to help more people and have a bigger impact. Even that feels a little bit like, who am I to want that for myself and for my business? But I do want that. And it's okay that I'm not great at it to start, but I have to start or I will never get there. And really, I define what great is. To some extent, I can already tell myself I've done great. And in some ways, I really have. I've built a lot and not a lot of time. And in other ways, there's still so much more I want to do, which again, kind of gets back to that 6 months down, 6 months to go. So on that note, I'm gonna switch a little from like that bigger picture, talking about Build with Becky, Better with Becky, career change, into just kind of the idea of a mid-year audit and reset. All right. So like I said, it is July. Somehow 6 months of 2025 are already behind us and we have 6 months to go, which is a little wild. If you're anything like me, that kind of snuck up on you and feels like it came out of nowhere. And when you think about the last 6 months, I'm kind of curious how it lands for you and how it's been for you. And I posted about this and I'll link to that in the show notes as well. But one thing that I asked in the post was, are you proud of how far you've come? And that kind of gets into what I was just talking about with business and development and what's next and what I haven't accomplished yet. But I think, you know, we tend to do a lot of that with ourselves. We tend to think like, oh, you know, I haven't done enough or I haven't made enough progress yet. But actually, we don't tend to add the yet. That's my advice, that we start to add that word yet on the end. So maybe I haven't done enough yet, or I haven't made the progress I want to yet. But the cool thing is, even if you feel that way, and even if it's 6 months into the year, the whole second half of the year is still wide open. And you still get to write the story of those next 6 months. And that's nothing to sneeze at. So no matter how you feel, no matter whether you feel proud or maybe a little bit lacking, or I don't know, you could feel any number of things. But I would really encourage you to take a moment to reflect on what you've done, what you've built, maybe what you've navigated or even just kind of endured the past 6 months, and give yourself a little bit of credit for the wins and reflect back on something that you're maybe genuinely proud of so far from January to June, and then let that kind of refocus you to what might be meaningful to have accomplished by December. And then maybe you can recommit to even today, what's one small step that you can take today? And it might take a little reframing. Like I said, maybe you have to kind of shift away from I haven't done enough to I haven't done enough yet. And then take that first step, because there's really so much time left in this year and there's so much that we can still accomplish. So when I kind of think of that, I'm in this space in the year where I was lucky enough to travel recently. I had a couple weeks in Japan with Justin, and then I was home for a week, and then I took a solo trip to Europe where I got to visit friends in Ireland and the Netherlands. I got to visit BWB member Mary, OG member of the beta testing group, and then I also got to see my friend Nadia, who was also in that original group. And she's in London. So I got to do all these incredible things. I got to kind of like confirm to myself, wow, I have created this business that's sustainable that I can do from anywhere in the world. I can get back to things that I really love, like travel. I can kind of autonomously operate in any way I want to now. And then there's really nothing like travel to then when you come home, you kind of get that natural opportunity to reset and kind of that natural clean slate feel. So since I also noticed as I was doing that it was the midpoint of the year, I kind of thought it'd be a great time to do a self audit of a lot of things in my life and just kind of revisit, reflect a bit, maybe refocus, recommit. And I thought I'd share that with you along the way in case that's of value to you. Because maybe like me, the midpoint of the year snuck up on you. So when I think of a self audit at the midpoint of a year, like at the new year, I think it's very obvious. People tend to make New Year's resolutions or do a vision board or Even if they don't do those things, they tend to kind of like psychologically have a little clean slate for themselves and have some hopes for the year ahead, right? And the thing that I think we forget is that we don't have to wait for the new year for that. We can give ourselves that really any moment. But I, like I said, I think a natural point is at, say, the midpoint of a year, or if you're in business, maybe those quarterly moments throughout the year, maybe the start of a month or a Monday, whatever it is. But I found it felt really natural to do it while coming home from travel, which happened to coincide with the midpoint of the year. So for me, I did quite a lot of this. I did some physical resetting, like, you know, going through, unfortunately, our refrigerator broke down while we were out of town. So thankfully, we have cleaners that discovered it for us, and they did the heavy lifting of cleaning out putrid smelling vegetables. I'm so sorry, Leo and Elisette. We love you so much. But, you know, there was still quite a lot of like deodorizing, we'll say, going on there. And then I was like, well, why not just clean out the pantry, go through the kitchen, reset the cabinets a little bit. While I'm at it, might as well do the same with my closet and revisit summer wardrobe. Maybe kind of go through my office and make sure that's set up as a good space to get work done. And I even had the idea, like, maybe I just choose a different part of the house every week and kind of reset that and do that ongoing so that everything's always kind of like resetting all the time. But regardless, I did a lot of that initially, of kind of like auditing my physical spaces, from closets to pantries to offices to wardrobes, etc. Same thing then, once the physical was reset, it felt natural to move into the digital space. So getting back to inbox zero with email, revisiting the to-do lists that had piled up and kind of organizing and prioritizing those, checking in on the calendar and what appointments are coming up that I'd been deferring. And then that kind of led into reflecting on maybe behavioral things, some of which I track digitally, some of which I track physically. So for me in particular, as a trainer, and I would also encourage this in anybody who values fitness and self-awareness, I like to do some form of body scan to get data on where I'm at physically beyond the scale a couple times a year. So I usually do what's called a DEXA scan. Some gyms also have like an in-body scan or a bod pod. Some scales will do this now too, but it's a little less accurate, I would say. Although at least if you use the same scale, you can compare scale to scale. So it's, as long as you're comparing like to like, it's kind of fine. But I like to go and get a DEXA scan because it's kind of the gold standard. That way I learn not just my weight, but how much muscle mass I have and how much bone density, which is really important, especially for women as we move into perimenopause and menopause. So I want to make sure basically that the weights I'm lifting are strong enough, heavy enough, that I'm sending the ongoing message to my nervous system to hold on to my bone density, my muscle mass, and also keep my fat mass in a healthy range. So that's more like actionable data for me, I would say. It tells you something, of course, about aesthetics. It generally, for me, just like confirms or denies what my lived experience in my body is. But it also gives you some more important actionable data on, like, oh no, my back is needing more muscle mass. I need to incorporate more pulling movements, maybe something like that. So behaviorally, I like to get a DEXA scan or an in-body scan, maybe both. Sometimes that will then influence something about maybe my nutrition prioritization. So if I note that maybe body fat has gone up and muscle mass has gone down, and if that's something that I want to reverse, which of course you always have the autonomy, bodies are neutral, but if you want to gain muscle, for example, then you would probably want to be prioritizing protein in your diet, filling up with some healthy sources of fiber. You'd also want to be lifting weights to make sure that your body knows you want to hold on to muscle. Muscle is basically like a very expensive tissue to keep around. So if you're not lifting weights and you're not eating protein, you aren't giving your body the building blocks to create muscle. You'd have to be in a little bit of a surplus usually and lifting weights in order to build muscle. Maybe doing some low steady state zone 2 cardio. If you're happy where you are, you just want to maintain, then you'd kind of want to figure out what your calories in, calories out are, and then just maintain it, not go up or down. And then, of course, just for like longevity, health, strength, bone density, keep lifting weights, keep some balanced cardio, whether it's walking, jogging, cycling, whatever you enjoy. And if you had the goal of losing body fat, you'd want to be creating a calorie deficit. That would mean burning more calories than you're consuming, which can be done in a variety of ways. But I always recommend, again, lifting weights is the primary. Potentially, you would add in some high intensity interval training or some sprint interval training, but that's very individual. Depends on the person, because some people, that'll make their hunger spike. And if your hunger spikes, obviously, that's not going to be great for controlling your appetite to be in a caloric deficit. So you got to be a little careful with that, but always, always the lifting weights. And then maybe you would be tracking your intake a little bit. So if you were going to track intake, there's a lot of ways to do that too. You can kind of just like measure stuff with your palm. I can link to a resource for that if you're curious. That's a handy one just because your palm's always with you. So it's kind of like your palm would be the size of your protein. Your thumb would be like a serving of fat. A cupped handful would be for like carbs or veggies, that kind of thing. You could, of course, count calories. That's a little bit more involved, and for some people, a little like, what's the word? Like, it can just create a little bit of obsessiveness or, I don't know. If you have a disordered history with food, it can be problematic for sure. And then also, I just think calorie counting is kind of like the scale. So the scale can go up and down for so many reasons. It can be like you had a salty meal, so you're retaining water, so the scale's up a couple pounds. Or you had a bowel movement, or you sat in a sauna, so you lost water weight and you're down a couple pounds. But it doesn't really tell you anything about your muscle mass, your bone density, your fat mass. So that's why I go get those DEXA scans to learn like the actual data of what my scale means. Similarly, I would say calorie counting is kind of just like this very low level thing that's like, well, that's the literal number of energetic units going in my body. But it doesn't tell you much about what those energetic units are. So I prefer macro tracking, which is making sure you know how much protein you're getting, how many grams of fat you're consuming, and how many carbohydrates you're consuming. And why that matters is that, like I said earlier, if you want to maintain or build muscle, you have to give your body the building blocks to do so. And the building blocks are amino acids and protein. So of your calories, you want quite a lot of them to be from protein if you have a goal of building muscle. And there's every likelihood that if you are not aware of your protein intake, you are not doing this and you will not get the results you want. And that can be maddening. You know, if you're like working out hard and you're trying your best to be mindful of your overall intake, but within that intake, you're just eating the wrong ratios of things and that results in not building muscle. What a bummer. It's kind of like if you ever watched Arrested Development back in the day, like take a banana, throw it away. Like there's always money in the banana stand, but there's not money in the banana stand. The metaphor being like fuel for your body to build muscle if you don't eat enough protein. So it's one of those things that I would say, like, maybe skip the calorie counting and learn more about macros and macro tracking. If you are curious about that, I'm happy to do an episode on it or to post about it. I've actually been doing it for about a year now to kind of, first it was like for awareness, just to, like I said, revisit, re-audit, optimize. It was around this time last year that I started. And then it was also in tandem with my nutrition certification to try out their coaching to see if I'd want to use that with clients. I think I concluded I don't necessarily want to use their program, but I learned a lot myself and in the process was able to kind of make some body recomposition changes that I was after, which was fun. The thing too about macros that I find is I think it could become obsessive for some people, but in my experience as an individual who has a disordered history with food, I have never had that experience with macros because macros are more of a puzzle. You end up figuring out kind of what your maintenance calories are, and then depending on your goals, you decide how much protein you need to prioritize for what your goal is. And then besides protein and fiber, which are like the real important things to prioritize, you can kind of decide if you like eating higher fat, lower carb, or if you like eating higher carb, lower fat. Those are just kind of toggles, one of the other. So doesn't really matter as long as you stay within your calorie range. So it ends up being more like this interesting little puzzle to try to fit everything in. And it's actually very empowering. You learn a lot about food. You learn how to fuel yourself. And when you see changes relatively quickly in your body composition, and of course that's reflected on the scale, it's very motivating. So I find macro tracking is often a missing piece of the puzzle that people can really benefit from. So anyway, going back to kind of like auditing, I would say that like the DEXA scan, providing the data, which may or may not lead to revisiting my nutrition with macro tracking, those two tools together, I would put under kind of like my behavioral routines and auditing those. So whether that's like my daily routine, how I approach my movement and my nutrition. Getting regular scans builds in accountability and data. And then the data in turn builds in a way to decide what I want to focus on for the next spell of time. And I do tie that into kind of looking at my digital calendar and to-dos and priorities and goals, because maybe I'll look ahead and say, like, for example, with this episode, July to December. Well, what happens from July to December? Just like in your lived experience, we have back to school season. We have what I lovingly refer to as Happy Hallow Thanks Miss Eve, at least in Orlando. It literally starts like in August. All the Halloween stuff starts at the amusement parks. That bleeds right into Thanksgiving, which gets into Christmas and then the new year, right? And then, of course, everybody feels like shit and they go hard at the new year. And then right around now in July, they're kind of like easing up, enjoying summer and, you know, the next 6 months. So when I think of that, I might put into place some logical goals to, I don't want to say combat falling off, but kind of, you know, like I'm a human and humans have cycles of behavior and patterns that they tend to fall into. And those patterns are not just mental. They're also situational and seasonal and social. And so if I know like that I'm going on a trip before going back to school with my family, maybe I know I'm going to really prioritize protein leading up to it so that then I can be a little bit more laid back while I'm on vacation. Granted, I can be whatever I want to be anytime, but if I have particular strength or body composition or health goals, then it probably pays to kind of get ahead of some things in that regard. Or if I know Happy Hallow Thanks Miss Eve is coming up, maybe I also want to sign up for a 10K in the new year so that throughout this holiday season, I have progressive cardio training built right in and my steps are increasing as I'm enjoying all the holiday food, not in a like earning the food or working it off, but just in like a common sense approach to taking care of myself as this season of the year comes. That way I just know when I get to January, I'm likely to be comfortable with where I'm at and to be in a good place versus to feel like the last half of the year just totally got away from me. And now I have to make up for lost time and do something probably unsustainable, probably not evidence-based to quote unquote get back to where I was. So it's really just kind of like having the awareness to see what's coming and do what I call chessboarding. This is something I learned from Justin. He chessboards with everything in life, where he's like thinking six moves ahead and kind of planning ahead accordingly. I do that at this point when it comes to my fitness, my nutrition, my movement. I just look ahead at what's coming, whether it's this next week, this, you know, today, what I'm prepping for dinner, what social plans we have this month, trips that we have coming up, holidays and seasons that are coming our way. And I just kind of plan accordingly around all of it. And it doesn't have to be crazy controlled, but it's just kind of having that awareness so that even something like, let's say this past week, which was 4th of July, I knew we would be going out on the 3rd for an event that had some treats. I knew that we were likely to go out a time or two more midday. So then maybe I'm planning around that. Oh, the other meals, I'm going to, you know, be prioritizing protein and micro and macronutrients and fiber, hydration, so that if and when I want to fit a treat in, I don't have to think twice about it because I know the big rocks are in place. I know I've done my workouts. Everything is in balance. Everything is good to go, if that makes sense. So when I think of this audit, like I said, the physical revisiting, maybe it's cleaning out your closet, the digital revisiting of getting back to whatever you like to do with inbox zero, maybe to-do lists, your behavioral routines, what data you might want to collect to then inform the new goals that you set up. There's a lot of different things that you could do here, but that's kind of what I've been up to the last couple of weeks since getting home from traveling. And, you know, as with most things in my life, it's never all or nothing. It's never either or, black and white. It's actually mostly a messy middle with a lot of nuance, plenty of intention and thoughtfulness. So for example, when it comes to like resetting my closet, that could be because like, oh, I care about the fashion and whatever. In my case, it's really not. I've never been super into following the trends. And if anything, I seem to hate the current fashions, but it is something that when I revisit kind of my daily uniform of sorts, I get to then start each day with less friction. And if I have a kind of consistent uniform of what I'm putting on my body, it kind of ties into those other goals too, because I have awareness when I put it on each day of how it feels to be in that clothing day to day. And I get built-in feedback of where I'm at that point in the week, in the month, in the year, whatever. When it comes to resetting like the pantry or the fridge, it's, you know, nice to clean it out and great to deodorize after the fridge failing on us. But it's also an opportunity for an intentional reset of mindful eating, intentional nutrition. That, of course, then ties into the physical energy in my body, the fuel for workouts, whatever nutritional or body comp goals I might have, and even the behavior that I have around them of making it easy and enjoyable. So, you know, making sure I have like a lot of berries that are in season and at eye level, and then maybe putting away or even getting rid of tempting snacks, getting them out of the house that maybe don't support my goals in this season. And I know I can always go out and get them if I want them, but maybe I'm not going to have them so easily accessible. When it comes to resetting digital spaces, when I get to inbox zero, it really clears the decks mentally for me. And then when it comes to like the calendar and to-dos and planners and things, that just helps me kind of organize the chaos and the logistical clutter in life so that I can start to prioritize, which in turn leads me to be able to kind of gently uncover, this time without resistance, because I have so much data after revisiting so many things and optimizing and kind of getting things calibrated. I then at that point kind of can answer the question of like, yeah, what is next? What have I not done yet that I might want to do next? At that point, I am able to kind of sit back and see, okay, this is what I want to stop doing. Here's what I want to keep doing. This is what's working for me. And maybe here's something I want to start doing. And it can be that simple. Once you have kind of cleared the decks physically, digitally, maybe behaviorally, depending on your goals, just kind of pausing to have the intention to ask yourself, how is it going? How far am I maybe from where I want to be? And how do I close that gap? So again, what do I want to maybe stop doing that's not serving me? What could I keep doing, continue doing that's really working well? And what do I want to maybe even start doing? And that's something that I've been really enjoying at this 6-month mark, coming back from travel, settling back into routine, having some runway ahead where we don't have any trips planned. And I really get to be in that routine and feel out what's working for me. So how about you? Do you like the idea of a 6-month audit? How about kind of pausing to reflect at that halfway point of the year? If you decide to do that, maybe ask yourself what spaces in your life are feeling smooth and solid, stress-free. They're really just kind of humming along and working well. And then maybe in contrast to that, also identify where you might be feeling some friction, or maybe you have some hecticness or even some hesitation that you'd like to feel out a little bit more. Put another way, I really feel like in life, almost everything comes down to this question of kind of approach versus avoid. So once you have clarity, once you've cleared the decks, once you've done that kind of mid-year reflection, maybe refocusing, recommitting, you might need some reframing in there, and you have that clarity, what do you feel like you're wanting to approach lately in your life? What's feeling good and you want more of it? And where are you maybe feeling a little avoidant? Like you want to pull back a little bit. And just kind of sitting with that and seeing, can you honor that? Or is it something that maybe you want to get out of your comfort zone and you want to stop avoiding? Only you really knows whether that avoidance is a sign, this person or this activity or this goal might not be serving you and it's time to shift. Or maybe it's something that you know you're avoiding because you're uncomfortable and you want to lean into it. You want to shift from avoiding to approaching it. Whatever it is, you have the next 6 months to write your story. And you get to finish 2025 strong, whatever that means, whatever that looks and feels like to you. So if you find in your reflection that you want to prioritize strength, physical strength that is, and progress in the next 6 months to finish the year out strong, of course I recommend you check out my program, Build with Becky. I build in all of these mindsets and philosophies into my programming, ensuring you have the support to be a beginner, to gradually progress and safely improve, to see yourself get stronger, all while giving you grace along the way. You can learn more about it at www.betterwithbecky.com. Until next time, thank you for joining me on this journey to a stronger self and a better life.